Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 122.
122. What it do, what it do?
I'm Nick alongside apparently a silly and sick Emily.
Oh, so we are acknowledging that I'm sick.
And also we had a whole conversation. Floppy Otto.
I apologize if my voice is a little weird in this. I feel fine. My voice has been going in and out for like the last week, and today is the best that it's been. So we're like, fuck it, we're recording.
Yeah, we're also recording this a week before Christmas, so it's like, we gotta get this thing out, man.
We have things to do, we gotta go.
We just got told we have tickets to the MSG show.
Woo!
The day after Christmas. So we're like, oh fuck, I have not a lot of time.
And we were not turning down those tickets.
So Emily, what is it we do here on this program?
Well, Nick, we take a week-by-week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW in the late 90s, early 2000s. I've been kind of changing that to say it's just the inevitable downfall because we are past the slow and it's just happening.
And Emily, do you know what episode this is?
122, you just said that.
No, cue the peanuts. It's the Christmas episode.
Oh my god.
So yeah, it's our last episode of 2024.
What a fucking year it's been, especially for everything we've talked about on this show, on this podcast. Like, so much has happened, but also hasn't happened. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think this year has been like more or less just like pure Russo. I don't think we've really gotten that much of a break of it.
Well, we got like the 4-episode break of no Russo post Bash of the Beach.
Yeah, but he was still around.
I know, but it didn't feel as Russo as this episode felt, because holy shit, did this episode that we're talking about feel Russo?
It didn't help that they hyped it like, hey, he's totally back. He has an interview.
Yeah, next episode we'll have plenty to talk about because it'll be a Thunder Report.
But today's episode we're talking about is the July 31st, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro live from Cincinnati, Ohio. Ratings-wise, let's just jump into that real quick. Did a 2.7 compared to a 6.4 from Raw.
Honestly, it doesn't even sound like that was that bad. A 2.7 doesn't sound bad.
It's still double a 2.7 is a 5.4.
Oh, I know, yeah. The ratio between the two is bad. I'm just saying a 2.7 alone doesn't sound horrible.
I've said it before, but like for the most part, it holds.
Yeah.
It's around here. I think we're nearing the random 2 weeks where Raw is preempted for, I think, the U.S. Open or
tennis
something.
Tennis, anyone?
Yeah. where it does like a 3-something, but like that's even more damning that it's like, yeah, not a ton of people
even when wrestling
care.
Fans have nothing else to watch, they won't watch you.
Yeah. So Emily, before we get into this show, let's talk about some backstage notes, because I actually have a handful here.
Okay.
Including a Letterman style top 10 list.
Oh.
So apparently this became a thing in the Observer, but Kevin Nash has still not paid the Pillman family the $20,000 he said he's totally going to pay them.
Oh, I forgot about that.
He does eventually end up paying them. The other person they noted hasn't paid them yet is David Arquette, who said, I'm literally waiting on all the checks
right,
to come
right,
in
right.
And then doing it.
Like, I believe David Arquette more than Kevin Nash. Honestly.
Kevin Nash eventually does, but
I think he got guilted. I think he was hoping people would forget he said it, and then they didn't.
ECW has 8 weeks left on TNN before WWF comes in.
Wow.
And they're basically likely screwed on pay-per-view offerings in Canada once they don't have national television. Yeah. So I did jump ahead a little bit in some notes with this. Apparently, when WWF comes to TNN, they suddenly waive the non-compete on TNN side for wrestling for ECW.
Okay.
So this is only half a death sentence.
Okay.
So I'm kind of curious to see what goes on there.
Because we're not done going back to ECW, are we?
No. Okay. We're going to keep reviewing all their pay-per-views through the end of the year.
Yeah.
We are going to look at one on a 1 week delayed schedule.
Okay.
Just because it happens the day before the final Russo Nitro. And I'm like, no, I want to get to that before our fun side venture.
Yeah, that's fair.
Back to the notes. Roddy Piper is officially no longer under contract with WCW.
Okay.
He hasn't turned up in WWF until 2003. Yeah.
Damn. I mean, honestly, I kind of forgot that he was still on contract with WCW. We haven't seen him in WCW for so long.
Yeah, Bobby Heenan is also only doing in-studio work now. They're just waiting for his contract to expire.
So he's not even on Thunder anymore.
No, Mark Madden's there.
Ugh, I'm sorry.
The woman with Kiwi, who is BB
in WWF.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I want to get that the thing it deserves. It was BB in WWF. It's already gone. Apparently, she was Hardcore Holly's girlfriend, and he didn't like her working for the competition, so.
Oh.
And she had a name, apparently.
With Kiwi?
Yeah.
What was her name?
She was apparently Papaya.
So they do say that in this show.
Yes.
Very passing briefly.
Someone else is going to be recast as Papaya briefly.
Okay.
But apparently she was Papaya.
Okay. Makes his fucking name make less sense.
In bad news and good news, Mona has been released by WCW. She is going to sign, I think, within a week.
Yeah, and then become Mighty Molly. Molly Holly first, right?
Yes, yeah. she's part of the Crash and Hardcore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that whole storyline. I forgot.
Yeah, she's part of the Holly family. That's why she's Molly Holly.
Yes, because they do, like, star-crossed lovers with the Dudleys.
But that's a few months in.
I just remember her being
in the Spike Hollies is still nowhere near WWF now. Yeah. So I have two final backstage notes. One is a fun little top 10 list. The other one is, like, a underrated thing that happened. So the top 10 list apparently was an inner office memo that got leaked.
Oh.
And it was someone wrote a Letterman top 10 about Vince Russo and circulated it.
So what is like top 10 moments, top 10 things about him?
I'm realizing that a lot of people may not know what the Letterman top 10 is, but it's like a list of 10 jokes about a certain topic, more or less. We've actually referenced this before because he did a wrestling one that we ran down. But I think you'll more or less get it as I go through, because I have the top 10 list.
Oh, let's go.
The top 10 questions not asked of Vince Russo. Number 10, would you like to take this opportunity to claim credit for the return of Cake Day?
Cake Day?
I think that's an inner office thing.
Sure,
I don't know.
Okay.
Number 9, I guess before we get to number 9. There's a whole thing about the possum. No one knows what the fuck it is. It might be a reference to somebody from Standards of Practices. It might be a reference to a wrestler. No one knows. However, I think that this joke is still evergreen. If the possum is going to wrestle for us, which reoccurring Saturday Night Live character will he be ripping off? Because apparently, apparently Kiwi is a ripoff of an SNL character. And after Kiwi debuted, SNL debuted a, like, antagonist to that character that was named Kiwi.
Oh.
Or Papaya. It might have been Papaya.
Interesting.
It was something weird with that. Number 8. How much did SFX front you for decreasing the value of the organization?
Oof.
Number 7 question not asked of Vince Russo. Are you going to let Bill hyphenate his name to Banks Russo?
Oh.
Number 6. Can you funnel the unwanted talent to the marketing department? The new VP of marketing has numerous openings with lots of opportunities for advancement. Number 5 question not asked of Vince Russo. When is Hulk coming back?
Never. Please, for love of God.
Number 4 question not asked of Vince Russo. What does the second W in WCW stand for?
Oh, because he didn't say wrestling. Is that right? Okay.
Number 3, how many young and hungry employees does it take to screw up an entire company?
Oh, Jesus.
Number 2, WCW Creative, is it a misnomer or simply a contradiction in terms? And the number 1 question not asked of Vince Russo, would you know an original idea if it jumped up and bit you on the ass, or would you just think it was the possum?
Oh, we gotta know who the possum is.
Hit it, Paul.
I gotta figure out who the possum is.
I think it's the... Based on this, I think it's a nickname for the Standards of Practices guy.
Okay.
Because I couldn't find any indie wrestler known as the possum.
No, I was thinking it was like digging a name at somebody from WWE.
Not that I could tell.
That was funny. That was cute.
And then I will end this on one of those like quiet war winner notes. So Matt Williams quit.
Okay.
Emily, who is Matt Williams?
Could not fucking tell you.
Correct, because we never talked about him before.
I think I went to high school with a guy named Matt Williams.
So Matt Williams was the director of research for WCW.
Ooh. Research? Yep.
He spent a year polling fans about the company and like what changes need to be made to like make it more enjoyable. And he polled current fans and he like found old fans and was like, What do we need to do to get, like, get you back? And Emily, would you believe it?
Oh, no.
The fans want more wrestling and less sports entertainment.
No, that can't be right.
So the writers threw the entire study out. Ed Williams quit for another job in the Time Warner organization.
Good for him. Know your fucking worth, man.
So, literally, the writing was on the walls, and they went, that's some weird wallpaper.
Wow. Jesus Christ. What do the fans want? Wrestling. Nah, not that.
I just don't know what they want, man.
Good Lord.
You know the meme of the one person in the meeting being thrown out of the window?
Yeah.
No, that's that.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, I think that just is the definition of burying your head in the sand right there.
Yeah.
And in that similar vein, we noted this show is the July 31st, 2000 Nitro. We are 6 months to the day of the Radicals debuting in WWF.
Debuting?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
And could this roster fucking use that mid-card talent?
They have mid-card talent. They're just not utilizing it. If the Radicals were still in WCW, they would not be utilized properly. If at all. They would... You're telling me
that I know.
Dean Malenko would not be part of MIA?
Oh, shit. What would his terrible name be?
Perry Saturn would definitely be MIA.
Yeah, he would.
I don't know that Chris Benoit would, though.
No, Benoit, I think, was going to be floating around in the main event, but... And then, I mean,
he'd probably be going head-to-head with Jerry.
Eddie Guerrero, I mean...
Oh, God, I forgot Eddie was a Radical.
Yeah.
Wow. No, they would have cut Eddie regardless because he's a luchador and they don't like luchadors.
I think the small problem in my brain, I'm like, you could just give Dean Malenko the Lance Storm push he's getting right now. Yeah, I actually wonder if they would have signed him.
I don't know. Because, I mean, we still have, I think, like, Psychosis and Hoovy are still on WCW.
Psychosis and ECW. We saw him.
Oh, you're right. We did. Oh, God.
Remember Psicosis?
Psicosis. It's different. It's legally different.
Illegally?
Three count's still kicking around, and they're great.
Yeah.
The Young Dragons, they're great. But never see these guys.
That's undercard. I mean, we do see them, but...
Not in a sense that, like, we should be seeing them, you know? Like, yeah, you're right. Those are undercard. But, like, what is our midcard? Who in the background could be a midcard?
Well, I'd say who's the midcard? It's Kenyon, like, Buff. That's... They kind of have it. It's just... Yeah.
It's not being utilized properly. I don't blame any of the Radicals
because
they made the right choice for their career, obviously. But if they stayed, they wouldn't be getting the work that they got in WWF.
Yeah, I mean, look at the two guys who decided to stay. You got Shane Douglas and Kidman. Look at what they're doing tonight. It's totally great.
100%.
Yeah, the title of this episode doesn't give away what they're doing at all.
We'll get there.
And you know what's up next, Emily? It's time for a weather report.
Oh, no. Is there a storm outside?
It's always thunder. Yeah, so Mark Madden's now on Thunder.
Sorry. You're the one watching Thunder. Sorry for you.
I'm going to try to go through this quick because I feel like sometimes we take a little time on this. The Young Dragons break the Cat's limo window. So with his new name, MI Smooth, I don't know what MI stands for. He wants to fight them in a match and just kills them in the match. Like, wait, I don't know.
Whose name is M.I. Smooth?
It's Smooth, the limo driver.
Oh, duh.
I don't know why M.I. added to it. Jeff Jarrett just beats Booker T in a bunkhouse brawl, which they're like, oh, it's a lights out match, so it's unsanctioned, even though we're airing it.
But it's
always a dumb concept.
Yeah.
I get why you want to, like, clam on to that as a symbol of old school wrestling, but you can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Because you know the origin of lights out matches?
Not really, no.
It is more or less the company has not sanctioned this match. So we are going to end the show, turn the lights off, and then, you know, maybe a match happens.
Oh, okay.
Like,
is this kind of like where the concept of a dark match came in?
No.
Oh.
No, this is more like, look, it was blatantly advertised as part of the show. It was just a kayfabe way to be like, the company, this match is so violent.
Oh,
the company
wants no
part of this, so the show has ended. We can't help what happens after.
Gotcha.
But when you televise it, then...
It's all a work, yeah. Brother. Work yourself into a shoot, which is a phrase we get defined later in the show. Fucking stupid.
Judy Bagwell wants a match with Kenyon. Kenyon gets buff banned from ringside, and Kenyon shows up with a black eye, and it's like implied that Judy kicked his ass, because remember last we saw, he kidnapped her.
Oh, yeah. He like threw her in the trunk of a car and drove off.
So in the match, Kenyon threatens to break Judy's neck unless Buff agrees to a Judy Bagwell and a pole match.
The woman's already in a neck brace.
Yeah. And Buff agrees, but Kenyon then actually hits the Kenyon cutter in front of a crowd. I'm like, oh shit, you did it. The Wall saves Major Guns from a Miss Hancock, David Flair trap and has joined the MIA as Sergeant AWOL.
Of course. I understand that that is a military term, but it's also, his name is The Wall and his name is now Sergeant AWOL.
The AWOL.
He's still a wall.
What are your pronouns? The A.
What's your last name, Paul?
We see this during the show, but Shane Douglas and Tori Wilson have their own sex tape to show, but Kidman swaps out the tape with one of Douglas talking about, oh, I can't get it up.
Oh, yeah. I think they referenced that. I wasn't like.
Oh, yeah, that's the whole premise of our match later. Yeah,
I was not following what they were referencing.
We get a sit-down interview with Goldberg, which just has a whole bunch of shit here. Talk a bunch about Scott Hall. He's not coming back, guys. They ask Goldberg about being a heel.
Oh, my God. We get it. You're so cool with your in lingo. Shut the fuck up.
I'm not comfortable with that. I only did it because somebody said I had to.
Oh, my God. I'm so fucking tired of this in shit.
He also notes that Nash was on the booking committee when he beat Goldberg in 98. And the only shot he has at New Blood Rising is to get on the committee again.
Oh, God.
Oh, is it a work or is it a shoot, Emily? Oh.
I'm so tired of it.
Yep. Spoilers for Next Thunder, but they advertise Vince Russo is going to get interviewed Next Thunder.
Listen,
and my hopes are so low.
I love the idea of like, oh, it's all real. We're really mad at each other. We really hate each other. Rabble, rabble, rabble. It's all real. What's not real? I saw a TikTok recently of a wrestling fan saying like, listen, between the hours of 8 p.m. and 10 p.m., everything on the TV is real. I hate Kevin Owens, I want Cody Rhodes to beat his ass, whatever. The second 10 p.m. hits, Kevin Owens is a really good guy. He's just a person. We need to find that line again. Or this company needs to find that line, is what in the past.
I would say, you know who's actually found that line in 2024/2025? Because we're about to be there.
Oh, God.
The way they've more or less treated the CM Punk storylines.
Yeah.
Has kind of merged that of like, look, you have people who are going to be professional, and like they're gonna, Seth Rollins is going to call him Phil, whatever. It was admittedly less cringy than this is Phil Brooks talking to Paul of that. Yeah.
I really want him to pull out a Colby, though. I really do.
That's game over. You can't call Seth Rollins Colby.
I need somebody to call Seth Rollins Colby. I will die.
But yeah, like, look, I imagine they're all good. Frankly, the only reason I believe that Seth might have issues is because he's such a fucking WWE mark.
Well, yeah.
But
no, and you're right with that. Like, in this year, in the year of our Lord, 2024-25, we have figured that line out. But in 2000 or 1999, it was so cool to keep that line so blurry, and the audience wants to be part of our...
It wasn't that cool. No, we'll get to that in the Kevin Nash promo.
Well, they thought that they were doing something by having the audience be part of the backstage politics. And like, now you know the words. Now you know the lingo. Now you can fight for us and with us. Like, ugh, I don't want to be part of your contract negotiations. I don't want to be part of your HR meetings. I don't want that. That's not the escapism that I want. And part of me thinks that they're trying to cling on to the power that the Steve Austin character had, like just before this and around this time, where WWF was really clinging to the idea that like the blue collar worker wanted to stick it to their boss. So they had Steve Austin, you know, stunner Vince McMahon, and like, oh, that was cool. That's something to like, oh, I wish I could be like that. So I'm thinking maybe they're like, I'm putting too much thought into this, I know. But maybe they're trying to be like, oh, well, this is just like your workplace. We have our problems too. We're going to stick it to our boss.
Yeah. So, Emily, what period of time are you talking about?
With Steve Austin?
Yeah.
It was a couple years ago, right? It was like 97, 96, 97?
It was 98.
98, okay.
Just give me a favor. Jog my memory. Who was writing the television program in WWE at the time?
I'm going to kill myself. Fuck off.
Yep, it's Mr. Vince Russo.
Did I just like...
Yeah. Yeah, you did. Emily, you have worked yourself into a shoot. Emily, let's start.
Fuck. That was so bad. And that was so genuine, too. I really thought I was doing something. I thought I was getting into the psychology.
That's how it is, Vince Russo.
God damn it, Vince. Oh, my God.
So, Emily, there's no great way to do this. Let's get into Nitro, where we start with a man has died.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. I booted up the episode. Like, yep, Rip Gordon Sully. I'm like, yeah, oh, shit.
He was a commentator, from what I can tell, right?
Yeah, so he was the commentator for, like, the early days, WCW, NWA territory.
I recognize the name.
So, I think the best testament you kind of give his legacy is... At one point, Vince McMahon bought a wrestling company. I forget which one it was, but he like bought the time slot and everything for this company, and they complained, "No, we want our Gordon Sully wrestling."
Okay, maybe that's how I've heard it, because I think I've heard that reference in a documentary or something.
Yeah,
because
he was so synonymous with the product at the time that it was like, "No, he is the commentator. He is the voice of this show." Okay. When Crowbar does his commentary bit, which, by the way, good news, I found out he apparently does more of that before the end, before the show ends.
Yes.
I don't know for how long, but I discovered that.
He's not done. Thank God. I miss Crowbar. We haven't seen him in a couple weeks.
But my gut instinct is telling me, if you ask Jim Ross who the greatest commentator of all time is, he's going to say Gordon Sully.
I mean, Tony Schiavone was saying as much on commentary here.
Yeah, but I respect his opinion less. No, I mean, he also did it in a memorial sense. I think Jim Ross, you can clearly see.
Yeah.
He is just very much the voice of a bygone era, and people love him for that. But we get a 10-bell salute for him, and then we get a Booker T video package talking about him being a fighting champion, including Jeff Jarrett taking out his knee on Thunder.
This kind of read to me as like, man, Booker T's great. Isn't he great? Wouldn't it be, you know, horrible to have somebody that's not Booker T be the champion? Let's make plans for Christmas, you know?
Well, earlier today, Booker arrived with LaVestia?
LaVestia.
Yeah. I just, you know, it's like it only matters for so long. Jesus. So they got all the way here. They flew, they drove in. She's like, don't go. Like, girl, that ship has sailed.
Yeah, you're already here. I imagine that, like, as a married couple, I can kind of speak to these kind of arguments. I imagine this has been, like, said in under-the-breath comments or in the car or, like, maybe don't. And then it finally came to a point of, like, fucking don't.
But, like, this show's in Cleveland, Ohio. This isn't even, like, close to Harlem or Houston, depending on which one you want to claim.
I mean...
Or even Atlanta. Like, whatever you want to say he lives in.
Depending on where he, like, if he flew. Like, Harlem to Ohio is only, like, what are... 3-hour drive? Or no, 3-hour flight?
Okay, I was saying, like, drive. Sorry. It's like 10 to 12 hours.
No, yeah. It's not a long flight. I mean...
No, but still... Well, it's 2000, so TSA might not be as bad.
Why?
Anyway.
Conspiracy theory out now on Patreon.
She doesn't want him to go to the arena. He's like, no, I'm gonna go. And we get the opening pyro, and then Booker T coming out to the ring... Booker says the people are saying he's too hurt, but Booker says they'll have to kill him to get his title. And the commentator's like, oh, LaVestia doesn't look too happy about that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Booker talks about how everything he owes to the people, yada, yada, yada. Notes, last week we were supposed to get Booker T versus Sting, but Goldberg interrupted, so tonight we're going to get Booker T versus Sting for the title.
Yeah, right.
Did you catch the fucking propaganda they pushed about the poll?
No.
Oh, Sting got 53% of that poll.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the poll, like the Viagra on a poll.
No. When we saw the last week, when they're like, here's the current numbers, 5 minutes before, he had 35% of the poll.
Well?
He gained 18% of the vote. Unless there's 20 people voting, no.
Are you telling me that wrestling inflated numbers?
I'm saying they gave numbers and then inflated them. That's different.
They lied on top of their lie.
So Kidman probably got -3% then.
Oh, yeah. Kidman actually didn't get any votes. He just got hate mail sent to him.
Booker tells Sting they're going to go to war, which brings out the chosen one, Jeff Jarrett.
He is so wet.
He always is.
He's like particularly wet. Why is he so wet?
Jared says he's going to drop the bomb on your mom.
Is this a thing? Please don't make this a thing.
Well, he's just quoting Booker's multitude of catchphrases.
Don't make this a thing.
Admittedly, Booker has too many, I'm quoting Airplane here, I speak jive catchphrases.
It's on like neck bone.
Yeah. Because, look, he has don't hate the player, hate the game, which is fine, but he still tries like six others in almost in every promo he has.
Yeah. He hasn't, like, fully committed to one.
Jarrett says the Sting match won't happen because Jarrett has the match in New Blood Rising.
But it also shouldn't happen because Sting's not back.
He is.
We're pretending.
But if we're pretending, he is. He's been back for weeks then.
But they haven't really revealed him. That's not fucking Sting.
Well, speaking of the catchphrases, Booker has multiple lines in his response, which is, if you want to dance, you got to pay the band and save the drama for your mama.
Okay, yeah, he said that one a couple of times in this episode. Stop talking about my mama. Don't drop bombs on my moms. Don't save the drama for my mom. Leave her out of this. Like, I don't like that. I've never liked that. I'm like, the your mom jokes even. Like, it's just, ugh. Why? It's juvenile.
I'm reminded of, there's a great APA Dudley Boys segment where they talk something about Bubba Ray's mama. It's like, you don't even know my mama. And Farouk goes, not very well.
What are you implying, Farouk?
That he quickly fucked his mom.
Jesus. I don't like it here.
So Booker doesn't want to wait for the New Blood Rising match, and the two brawl on the ramp. Jarrett grabs a chair in the ring, but Booker hits a Harlem sidekick. Booker grabs the knee, so Jeff Jarrett hits Booker with a chair, and then Jarrett locks in his new favorite move. It's a figure four around the bottom rope.
It looks kind of cool. I can see what he's going for.
But
I appreciate the effort.
Until you like put any logic.
Don't.
Yeah. The lights go out. Sting comes out in his gear and his ski mask.
And so once again, I was like, that's not fucking Sting. So here's my thought process here. Sting comes out. I've been such a hater on the fake Stings in the last couple weeks. So I'm like dissecting piece by piece of this quote unquote Sting. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, he kind of looks like Sting. He could pass as a real Sting. Damn, this is a good stand-in for Sting. I was still so like, this is not Sting.
Oh, things I missed from Thunder, by the way. Jumping back. I don't know if it's Thunder or Saturday Night, but apparently Chris Harris and James Storm wrestle on Saturday Night or Thunder in one of these weeks. And also, we got the debut of a wrestler named Skip Over.
Oh.
Who is going to become Elix Skipper, who I mainly know, and you may have seen the clip, for his like cage walk Hurricane Rana in TNA. It's like one of the quintessential TNA moments.
I've probably seen a clip of it.
But he is going to get involved with the group soon. But I forgot I want to mention that.
Okay. Oh.
But Sting comes out in his gear and his ski mask, hits a Stinger splash, clears Jarrett from the ring.
Because again, here I'm like, damn, he looks like Sting. That looked like a Stinger splash. I'm like, wow, somebody's been practicing.
Yeah, he unmasked. It's Sting.
It's fucking Sting. I'm like, ah, shit.
I forget if this is the one that has the thumbnail of him. I might have been, but I think we missed that.
Oh, maybe.
For better, honestly.
Yeah, that was okay. I like that genuine reaction.
Sting grabs the mic and calls out Vampiro. And then helps Booker up and says, like, hey, we'll have the match later if you're feeling up to it. Jeff Jarrett then says, if Sting wants a show, he'll give him a show. Slap Nuts Theater.
God.
Which I'm really sad to say just cannot be the title of this episode because it has to be Viagra and a pole.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, Jeff Jarrett also calls Booker Slappatory. Or Slappator? One of the two. Earlier, like when he first comes out.
So Jarrett's Slap Nuts Theater is pulling Booker T's wife over the barricade and hitting her like weirdly quick but not quick with his guitar. He hits her like kind of in the back shoulder, but I don't know what he was going for here.
He was going for safe and as painless as possible to LaVestia.
Jeff Jarrett runs away as Sting, Booker, and security check on LaVestia. And Sting turns to the camera and is like, go get a doctor.
That was a great moment. Sting just looks at the camera and he's like, so you're going to get a paramedic or what? Like, can you get a paramedic or something? Can you do something other than have this camera in this injured woman's face?
During the break, did you catch the, like, previously on where the neck brace was just, like, laid over her face?
No.
It was not around her neck. Because when they go to the ambulance, it's on her neck. But before that, it's just, like, generally over her face.
No, I totally missed that.
But at the ambulance, Sting tells Booker, like, go to the hospital with your wife. I will take care of Jarrett.
Good guy, Sting.
Yeah. I mean, he is. Yeah. minus the golly gee shucks, it's sure great to be champion. I liked the segment. It made sense for fighting champion to be like, hey, I was supposed to face other good guy.
Yeah.
He got fucked. Let's do this match. Like,
right.
I liked the logic there and Jarrett wanting to... And they, I think, half explained it of Jarrett wants to face Booker as opposed to Sting because Sting's more established. Like, I'm on board here. It makes a little bit of sense. I'm here for it.
Okay.
We then get commentary checking in. It's Scott Hudson, Tony Schiavone, and, quote, TV's best-looking big man, Mark Madden.
Yeah.
They continue that on... they had that on Thunder, and it seems like a thing that's going to keep going.
Why are you lying to yourself, Madden?
I don't fucking know.
Because Lord knows nobody else said that to you.
Mark Madden's line here. Jarrett took La Vestia down Slapnuts Boulevard. He'll take out the Mime tonight and the Gimp at New Blood Rising.
Jesus. Wait, which is which?
The Mime is Sting because the face paint and the Gimp... he has a Gimp leg, not the sexual Gimp at New Blood Rising.
Well,
Booker.
Yeah. Does he have a bad leg? Oh, because he has the knee brace on. You're right.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking of the sexual Gimp.
I was for a second. So I was really confused what the fuck he meant. I'm like, he's not wearing a... like, if you called...
no leather.
Well, no. I'm like, all right, if Rey Mysterio's in a mask and you want to like get some weird heat, like, okay, whatever. Sure. But like... like, La Parca, he fucks. Does that dance, too. Let's move into our first match. It is Buff Bagwell versus Big Vito.
Big Vito.
Who, he is, like, credited as Big Vito.
Good.
So Buff Bagwell comes out without his mom at first, is all smiles, and then, oh, nope, here she is. We see the clip from Thunder of him agreeing to the match in New Blood Rising, and Mark Madden raises a good point. Why is Judy Bagwell still here?
Yeah.
Like, why is Buff Bagwell bringing her week to week?
Why doesn't she go home?
Yeah. Because, admittedly, it would be different. Like, look, Tori Wilson is getting hit every now and again.
Yeah.
But she's actively interfering in matches, so it makes sense.
She's also
managing.
On contract. She's also on roster.
Disregard that for a second. What does Judy Bagwell do during any Buff Bagwell match?
Stands and waits or sits on commentary?
Yeah, fucking nothing. Why are you bringing her?
Yeah, because why not? Mark Madden has a line about that where he's like, I think Judy secretly wants to be with Canyon. So this is kind of like a Princess Peach and Bowser situation where she's like, oh no, Bowser, you're going to kidnap me. Oh no. See you next week.
Tony Schiavone explains that if Canyon wins in New Blood Rising, Judy becomes his valet. And when asked about it, Judy has absolutely nothing to say.
I don't think she knew. I think they made this
her
up on the
storyline. No,
yeah, no.
He mentions that at Thunder. She had a week to think of this.
Well, okay, come on. Your mom and mine, lovely women. You tell them something, they're going to remember it a week later?
They're not appearing on television.
I don't know, man.
Sorry, is your mom on TV? We don't know it?
She could be. My mom's a star.
Buff hits a hip toss, and I've spotted a very large woman in the front row for Mike Awesome. This doesn't really end up coming up, I realize.
It doesn't. I was thinking about that. Like, we barely even see Mike Awesome in the show.
Commentary's like, oh man, Buff can't even concentrate as Buff hits a swinging neck breaker and a strut.
I think he's fine.
Yeah. Vito hits a stun gun and works over Buff in the corner. Buff hits a few clotheslines and confronts a ring worker who he suspects is Canyon.
Yeah, this becomes a storyline throughout the whole match where Buff is just paranoid about all the ringside people thinking that they're all Canyon.
Yeah, which
it's a good storytelling. I like it.
It is, and I like that element of it. However, just don't bring your fucking mom to ringside and it's fine.
Okay, we're past that.
No, we're not.
It's happening. We can't change what's happening.
Vito hits a mafia kick but gets crotched on the top rope. Buff hits a superplex and both men are down.
Oh my god, wait. So on commentary, I don't remember when in the match this happens. So Tony on commentary wants to engage Judy in conversation because Judy's sitting on commentary. Kind of, I guess, contributing. Not really.
No.
So Tony wants to get her talking. And obviously he wants to talk about the match that was set on Thunder. So to start that conversation, Tony goes... Judy, what are your thoughts of, I'm so sorry to bring it up, the Judy on a pole match? The way he says it is like, you don't want to be actually saying the words you're saying and you didn't realize what you were about to say before you were saying it.
Oh, I guess I should note, this is not a case of Mandela effect. the Judy Bagwell on a pole match becomes Judy Bagwell on a forklift.
Gotcha.
On the show.
Okay.
So if you're wondering why it's Judy Bagwell on a pole, it's because it is literally advertised as that until the 11th hour.
The day of. Oh, yeah. My God.
I think literally the match is about to start and he goes...
I think Tony just didn't realize how erotic the thing he was about to say was until it was like starting to come out of his mouth. Oh, I didn't
take it
to that. Judy on a pole? She's either a stripper or she's fucking. One of the two.
Buff hits a double arm DDT and signals for the blockbuster, but first confronts a cameraman who like got near the announce table near Judy. Back in the ring, Vito drops down on Aloha and pins Buff Bagwell. A little bit of an upset.
Wow.
This is a decent match. I like the story of Buff being paranoid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does have the logic hole of don't bring her.
Hey, don't ask questions.
Frankly, the way you get around this is Buff doesn't bring her 1 week and Canyon goes to their house.
Yes.
Like, that's all you have to do.
But don't you want to travel with your mom? Wouldn't you love to travel with your mom? Your mom's a lovely lady.
No comment.
Do you want to travel with my mom?
I would say, thanks, Mom, for the WWE ticket, for the WWE MSG tickets.
We love your mom.
Oh, yeah. I love my mom, too.
She's the best.
Any thoughts on this actual match?
No, I agree. I like the angle that they're going with Buff. I thought this was an interesting way to like move it forward. At least they're doing something.
Look, as much as I get fucking annoyed about Buff Bagwell, like he's a decent hand in the ring.
Yeah.
Like he's not anything crazy, but like he can. I don't feel embarrassed watching Buff Bagwell.
Not anymore. I feel like there was a point where you did.
No, I got annoyed watching him because of his stupid fucking strut, and I still do. Let's go backstage, Emily. Who is with the cat?
Kiwi.
Sorry about that. Can you tell me who's with the cat?
Sorry, you're right. It's the Kiwi.
Yeah. Emily, it's always been Kiwi. What are you talking about? It's never been Kiwi. It's always been Kiwi.
Don't you fucking gaslight me, cat.
It's always been Kiwi. That's why his wife's named Papaya. And we made a bunch of fruit jokes about it being Kiwi and not Kiwi.
Don't gaslight me.
So Kiwi wants a match with the artist. The cat says he's just part of the wardrobe department. So Kiwi threatens the cat with a dirty slipper. I don't think he realized how dirty it was before he grabbed it.
Oh, probably not. But the name Kiwi just does not roll like Kiwi. Kiwi is just easier to say. It's an easier word. It's a more memorable word. Kiwi is just worse. It's not even objective or subject. It is just fact.
The cat laughs at Kiwi, so he loses it, knocks everything off the cat's desk, and screams at the cat. And, like, he drops the, frankly, gay voice. And he, like, oh, you seem to be taking this seriously. Like, you're just doing your voice now. So the cat relents and he has the match. So our next match will be the artist versus Kiwi. But first we have Pamela Paulshock with Canyon. And she asks, why do you want Judy Bagwell? And the plan is apparently I need a Kimberly and Judy is going to be my Kimberly. And additionally, if she does a good job, maybe I'll make her a Nitro girl.
Oh my God. But Pumpkins, like, kind of takes this opportunity to question his manhood. Like, do you feel like more of a man when you go around and, like, canyon cut these women?
Yes. In fact, maybe I'll canyon cut you.
And then he goes for it. And who comes to her rescue?
I would have not guessed this with 50 guesses.
Spoiler, this is my fucking MVP.
Fucking Mean Gene Okerlund.
My hero, Mean Gene.
He's had fucking 4 Okerlunds. He's ready to go.
He's ready to fucking fight.
Yeah, so
save me, Gene.
So Canyon cuts Gene off screen. I don't know which thunder it is, but there's going to be a match of...
Oh my God, Canyon versus Mean Gene? Shut up.
It's a tag match because Canyon teams with Mark Madden. Oh. I think it's Buff and Mean Gene. I'll have to find this.
We must watch that. I don't care if it's on Thunder. We will be watching and reviewing that.
But yeah, just Gene just pops in and just like, oh, not this.
Didn't even know Gene was still here, honestly. Yeah. Why are you here, man?
I think he was at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, but like, you don't need to be here.
The longer Gene's here, the longer I hold out hope for like, maybe Ric Flair will come back soon and we'll get one more.
God, we do need one more.
But that goes to commercial. Back from commercial, Buff Bagwell just finds Canyon leaving the scene like 12 steps away, hits a double arm DDT, and that's it.
The end.
Yeah, what the fuck?
I don't know.
That was so underwhelming and shit.
Yeah, they should have just not done that. It would have been better without that.
Like, that should have been a segment that only the live crowd sees. Just like, hey, everything's fine, guys.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Backstage, Sting is looking for Jeff Jarrett with a bat. this doesn't really lead to anything. They just have a thing later. But then we go to the artist with Paisley versus Kwee-wee.
How is Kwee-wee spelt, Nick?
K-W-E-E space W-E-E.
It's the worst possible way that you could pronounce and spell Kwee-wee.
I'm glad I'm not crazy, because I remember always reading this as Kwee-wee, and then when it started to Kiwi, I'm like, am I dumb? I'm like, nope.
I was really hoping it would be like Q, Q-U-I, Q-U-I, whatever.
So, all right.
Or whatever.
Relatedly, somewhere around here, I don't fucking know when, but the Disco Inferno is no longer that. He is now Disco, spelled D-I-S-Q-U-O, like the singer Cisco.
Why?
But, like, I feel like it may have already happened, and we've entirely missed it. It doesn't fucking matter.
Why are we changing the match?
I don't know.
Yeah. Why are we changing spellings? That's dumb. You're just, like, actively making yourself more difficult for, like, search engine optimization. Your SEO in the year 2000, garbage. No one can spell this. No one can look them up.
Paisley looks like she actively doesn't want to be at the artist anymore, and Kwee-wee storms the ring, they brawl on the ramp, his commentary really starts hitting that W in Kwee-wee.
Yeah, because it's always been that.
The artist is also wrestling in jeans and a t-shirt. They're like, oh yeah, this is a weird look for him.
So, they're trying to play this off as like, oh yeah, Taff Cappy is going for more of like a hardcore thing to keep Paisley.
Somebody like, referenced the Village People.
Yes, it is very Village People. But they're like, oh yeah, Paisley wants a real strong man. So he's going to dress in hardcore. T-shirt and jeans is hardcore. Sure.
I have a different theory I'll tell you at the end of this match.
Well, that wasn't even a theory. That's just what commentary was saying.
Well, I have a theory I'll tell you at the end of this match. Within 30 seconds, we get the artist doing the oh no, gone school.
Go, go, boy. Bip, 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 bip.
Kwee-wee hits a vest press and a flurry of hands and a drop kick. Back body drop and a sunset flip, but he stopped with a headbutt to the groin. Kwee-wee pops up, hits a back elbow and a drop toe hold. The artist hits a bridging German, but Kwee-wee follows up with a back suplex. Kwee-wee hits a tilt-a-whirl front falling flapjack. Kind of a, like, that's his finish. Kind of an interesting move. I don't know how versatile it'll be, but that gets him the pin, and he is beating the artist. Paisley smiles at Kwee-wee as he grabs a mic and does like an Incredible Hulk line, being like, oh, don't make me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry. Just confirming, oh, you have a split personality gimmick. This is going to be shit.
This is going to be a whole thing.
As a match, this was fine.
It was underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, it's the artist versus Kwee-wee. It was serviceable.
Sure. That was a hell of a sentence that you just said.
Do you want to know my theory on why the artist was dressed the way he was?
What is your theory?
Well, Emily, this is the final match for the artist in WCW.
God damn it!
And I think he was just fucking done.
He knew it was his last one. He's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
No, Taff Cappy!
He didn't dress all that up for his Thunder match either. I don't. Is he worth a post-mortem? I don't think so.
This is like the recorder version because I'm sick. Every night in my dreams,
Emily,
I see you, Taff Cappy.
Emily, either give final thoughts or we're moving on.
I don't fucking care.
You know what's funny? I actually was recently listening back to the first couple episodes of our podcast, and you praised Prince Iaukea. You're like, see, he has this Polynesian gimmick, but he's not like the Usos. I'm like, I don't think he's Polynesian.
Fuck.
If you want a fun trip, go back and listen to those episodes, because I reference fucking Conspiracy Theory on episode 3.
Oh my god. Oh, we were such young babies back then in the year of our Lord 2020. We were still in lockdown.
Yeah.
Trump was still president the first time.
That said, yeah, I think we might give him more credit than others will, but he's fine.
I liked him. He was good enough.
He's good enough for the time.
He's never going to be in a Hall of Fame, but like he's fun.
He's not one of your boys.
No.
Let's go backstage. Scott Steiner and Medasia ask somebody where the cat's office is. Just a random worker. The guy tells him. Scott Steiner goes, oh, thank you. And then just throws the guy around.
I like that.
They then get to the door. Steiner goes, should I knock?
I like this version of Scott Steiner. He's a little like, fucky.
Yeah, probably. He knocks and then just like, kicks the door open. So we get in, and by the way, this Steiner is holding a lead pipe. The guy just like pre-knocks everything off his desk, which is
he just knows.
I think like an underrated bit of comedy he keeps doing every week.
He's just like, fuck it. You're gonna do it anyway. Let me be the one to do it.
So Steiner wants a title shot, but the cat explains, like, look, Booker's not here right now, and if he comes back, he already has a title match.
Yeah.
So Steiner says Booker has a pipe match with him in the back of the building. And I continue to love the cat just not being fazed by Scott Steiner.
Yeah.
Because the cat just goes, why don't you pipe your ass on out of here? Like, what?
Done with your fucking bullshit, man.
Kevin Nash then arrives, and back from commercial, Norman Smiley emerges from a door and asks Medasia, you want to get freaky tonight? Like, wait, what?
Shoot your shot, Norm. Let's go.
You want to get freaky with the wiggle? Steiner hits him with a pipe, throws him out the door, and goes, the door's locked. Like, what?
Okay.
Honestly, I was a little relieved. I was sad but relieved there was no Ralphus, because I've said we're done with him, but I think we are.
I would have given you so much shit.
Oh my god, what if Ralph... See, that's why they had to get rid of him. If Ralph had asked Medasia...
She would have said yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Scott Steiner would have lost one of his freaks.
Oh no.
Or gained another. Or I don't gained know a which.
Freak. I think maybe Ralphus would be on board.
Ralphus with Scott Steiner. Oh, that would
be amazing.
I fucking love that.
That would have been amazing. Oh no, damn, I want that.
Because also he can talk about like how he's the best in sex and like reference how bad Ralphus is.
Yeah, or what if plot twist, Ralphus is even better than Scott Steiner in sex? Who knows?
You're just doing a Podrick storyline at this point.
Yeah.
Elsewhere backstage, Pamela Pumpkins is with the Misfits in Action and their new member, Sergeant AWOL, which they just gloss over. Like, yeah, he's here.
They don't say who he used to be. They don't mention the Mohawk.
I forget if it's here or on Thunder where they actually mention Major Stash.
Oh.
He's gone, but...
Oh.
Oh, yeah, it is Thunder. Because they say no one can interfere in your match, and they list all of the MIA, which is why the Wall can come in, because he's not part of them.
Oh, sure.
So Generation says tonight, Misfits declare war on Canada.
So five guys are going to war with the whole country. That works.
Lieutenant Loco will rip off Lampstor's cojones, and they do a show me your war face because someone rewatched Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, totally.
Tonight, Major Guns is in a hardcore match with Miss Hancock, and Guns has one fucking line here. Remember what it was?
No.
Sir, yes, sir. She almost flubs that fucking line.
She'll never make it in show business.
She is.
She'll never make it.
I think she does porn. I don't think I'm wrong
about
that.
That's not show business.
But that segment brings us to Lance Storm, double champ against Lieutenant Loco, which I don't know when they actually know this, but this match is for the Cruiserweight title.
They do, yeah.
They mentioned it a little bit through, but there might have been the graphic at the start. I'm not sure.
I don't remember now. I don't know. But this is for the title.
They do know during Lance Storm's entrance recently at the Nitro Grill. Oh, look at this footage of Mike Awesome and Lance Storm disagreeing.
I don't think I realized it was at the Nitro Grill.
Yeah. But like, it's just like cords. Like, they're not a single hand is thrown. It's
no.
Hey.
Like, hey, you. Don't touch my chicken fingers.
If I can be serious for a second.
Aw, boo.
Storm calls the hardcore wrestling garbage and renames the hardcore title the Saskatchewan Hardcore International title.
Oh, we can't talk about those initials.
It's the South Harmon Institute of Technology.
Like, literally, anus.
Yeah, I don't... Well, different things, but...
I know, but same vibe.
I don't think I really noted the initials until they really were like, oh, we couldn't possibly. I was like, oh, well, thanks for that.
Yeah, you kind of ruined the joke for people who were paying attention.
It's no union of people you ought to respect, son. In other words, Shane, up yours.
Oh, fuck you.
That was Mick Foley, too. So,
okay, I love Mick. Very clever, but fuck you.
Lance Storm also says during his matches, WCW will stand for World Canadian Wrestling.
Got him. Let's go.
And it's not his fault. Canadians dominate this sport and tells everyone to rise for the anthem. Don't blame Canada, blame yourselves, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada.
The anthem is interrupted by the MIA, and Loco hits a springboard crossbody to start the match. Commentary says that Booker's wife is fine and Booker is headed back to the arena. Loco hits a head scissors but is dropkicked to the floor as Tony notes this match is for the Cruiserweight title, and a New Blood Rising graphic enters the lower third with the sound effect that just cuts commentary.
Oh my god, it's an aggressive sound effect.
Well, it's that, and then as they're filtering it back on, we just hear Tony Schiavone go, "His mic is not on!" And I'm like, Jesus, bud.
What the hell happened?
Storm and Loco trade strikes in the corner as Tony notes Cajun and Rection are in commentary with them. They haven't fucking said shit yet.
They don't say anything.
Chavo hits a jumping DDT, a dropkick, and a flapjack. Chavo then moonsault vaults over in the corner, but hurts his leg on the landing. And actually, convincing sell there.
Yeah.
Storm then starts targeting the leg and goes for a strange catapult into a pin attempt counter. I hadn't seen it before, I think, probably for good reason, because it was kind of
a little messy. All the words you said make it seem like it would not be clean.
Well, it was basically like a pseudo aloha where you drop, but it was like going with the catapult. The physics don't work there. I think that's why people don't do it.
Okay.
Storm goes for a powerbomb, but Loco counters with an attempted Hurricane Rana. But Storm grabs the leg on the counter and turns it into a Canadian Maple Leaf. And Loco taps out, making Landstorm a triple champion in WCW. This is kind of cool.
Has this ever been done in like WWE or F?
So, commentary's unsure. Has this ever happened in WCW? Yes and no. Ultimo Dragon came to WCW with like 9 fucking belts.
Oh, well, if he came with it, I don't know if that counts.
He might have won 1 or 2 in WCW. But like, in terms of like soul champions, triple belts.
We got Becky 2 belts.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking rare.
Yeah, I can think of a couple of instances of 2 belts, but I can't think of any with 3. Like, we got Becky, we got Roman, Jericho.
Well, even those where it's like merge, I'm thinking like people have like the tag team, like Miz had the U.S. and tag team titles. Fair. And that's happened a couple of times of singles title holding the tag team titles.
Yeah.
But I can't think of a triple.
No, me either.
So yeah, in the course of multiple companies, it's definitely happened. I mean, Kenny Omega recently in the last couple of years held like 4 different companies' belts.
Oh, okay. But, different company, sure.
Yeah, in terms of same company, I don't know.
That's kind
of
cool.
Tweet in if you can think of anything, because I'm struggling.
Yeah.
So before we get too far, thoughts on this match?
The match itself was kind of forgettable because it was more so about the like storyline going into it. I don't remember a lot of the like in-ring work of it. It was good. I mean, there's nothing bad happened, obviously. It's Chavo versus Landstorm. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But it's exactly what you expect it to be. It's just not something that like sticks out.
Well, I have to ask once again, can you fucking hype up, hey, anything? This guy might become a triple fucking champion.
Yeah, like, seriously. Any big moment could maybe get like some praise. I don't know. That'd be cool.
Yeah, you were saying last week, oh, well, you know, it's the shock factor. I'm like, what about this? Like, yeah. Do something.
Something. You're right.
So I wanted to recap this match before we get to the post-match.
Yeah.
Because almost immediately after he wins, we get Kevin Nash coming out to the ring. He grabs a mic. Landstorm takes offense to this, which...
Valid. I just had this big moment. You're going to come undercut it.
Nash big boots him out of the ring. Jesus fucking
Christ. Fuck you. No one can have anything nice.
No. I'm sorry. I'm big. I'm just bigger than the triple champion. So fuck him. Fuck like, it immediately undercut.
Yeah.
That. The entire fucking story.
Yeah.
Which you're already almost undercut by not promoting. So right. It's cool. Don't take Landstorm seriously.
Also, don't take your title seriously, because this man has 3 of them and nobody gives a fuck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You managed to quadruple Barry in one move.
Yeah.
We then get a commercial break, and then back from that, Nash says there's a phrase called working yourself into a shoot.
Ugh.
And I saw what Goldberg said about me. There was only one time I wasn't professional in a match in this business. When I was in the WWF in Canada, someone didn't want to lose in Montreal, his hometown, and then the next night I whooped his ass.
Wonder who it could be.
It's not Brett.
Oh, really?
No, that's the thing.
Who is it?
It's fucking... It's Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
Sorry?
Yeah. The way he tells us, he really wants you to think it's Brett.
Yeah.
It's not.
Oh.
By the way, Jean-Pierre Lafitte is going to sign with WWE in the next 4 weeks.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, so... Looking into this a little bit, the guy didn't want to lose in his hometown because Canadians are always sensitive about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So Nash didn't even like shoot on him in the next match. He just got real stiff with him and, you know, went over his plan the next night.
Worked himself into a shoot.
Isn't it so cool knowing in industry terms?
Also, the guy he apparently took advantage of is blind in one eye.
Oh, great.
So what a big man Kevin Nash is.
Fucking great.
He's still wrestling. He has a PCO. He was in Ring of Honor when I was working
there. Oh, cool.
Nash then makes a few gay jokes about football players touching each other on the ass and how I used to work as a bouncer and the NFL players would come into the club and get a little too rowdy. We'd just kick them out and I kicked their ass too.
He also talks about being a basketball player and basketball players don't touch each other's butts or something like that.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Nash says he doesn't lose fights and he can't guarantee he's going to be professional at New Blood Rising. And he might just knee Goldberg in the face when he goes to the spear.
Jesus.
He also says he won't stop trying to bring Scott Hall back. And then Scott Steiner's music hits. Steiner says he doesn't give a damn about Nash or Goldberg. And the only reason he's not going to use the lead pipe he brought out is that we're both from Detroit.
That's it? That's the only reason?
But we're not going to wait until New Blood Rising, you piece of shit.
Cool.
They brawl until security, like, almost immediately breaks it up. Like, three punches are thrown. And, yeah, that's pretty much a segment. This will get set up for a match later, but this Nash promo had to go away heat for me.
Oh, yeah. It's annoying. It's just annoying.
I noted in the first Russo Nitro how much I fucking hate the, oh, is it a work or is it a shoot? Yeah. And this bullshit of, oh, we don't know the finish. Oh, I might not go along with the script, brother. I fucking hate it.
Oh, yeah, it's annoying.
And admittedly, just for equal opportunity, we noted Goldberg did a bit of this during his Thunder promo of the turning heel.
Yeah, and
you know, he mentioned the finish, and I fucking hate it.
Yeah.
Like, look, I'm suspending my disbelief. I don't need that bullshit in my life.
Yeah.
Backstage, Kevin Nash wants a match with Scott Steiner tonight, and he says someone's going to die, and it ain't going to be him. So Kat books Kevin Nash versus Scott Steiner in a straitjacket match.
How did we get to straitjacket, do you think?
I don't know, but okay. You know the match. Does it even fucking matter?
No, but I want to know, like, why is the cat, like, you know what? Sure, you get a match. It's a straitjacket match. It's just like he's pulling words out of his ass sometimes, which he might be.
Let's go to our next match, the heavily advertised Jeff Jarrett versus Sting.
So this should be a really big deal. This is Sting's return match.
Yeah.
He's been gone for how long? Like, multiple weeks at least.
I'm sorry, I feel like you undercut your own point there. He's gone a few weeks at least.
I mean, what, like, yeah, a month, 2 months?
Yeah, a month and a half.
Multiple weeks.
That's the problem, is they're like, oh my god, his face got, like, entirely burned off. He's fine. Like, 6 weeks ago. I'm like,
No more questions about the scars.
You're just like the doctors. The doctors I had to hurt.
Oh my god.
You're just like the demons.
Curse? What curse?
So it's Jeff Jarrett versus Sting. How did we go? Well, actually, sorry. That's actually not what this segment is, because Sting comes out to the ring and calls out Jarrett, and Jarrett just comes out, like, oh, he's been hiding all night. Has
he? Clearly not. I think he was just in his dressing room and nobody thought to go knock.
Because then Jarrett grabs a mic and calls out Sting, and it's like, all right. Oh, and they know that Sting is facing the demon at New Blood Rising. I think I said on a previous episode he's facing Vampiro. Mm. So I think you were right about that.
I thought so.
But, I mean, I guess to be fair, my note is, why? Why
is he facing the demon? Yeah, it's still dumb. It's still dumb.
Emily, I have it on good authority. The Nitro after New Blood Rising is the final appearance of Dale Torborg.
I fucking knew it. Have we seen the end of Asia?
I think so.
She was such a blip.
The problem with all the managers is there's just not a clear end point for them.
She's his fiance.
Yeah, I know.
When are they getting married?
I mean, he's coaching baseball nowadays.
Imagine our kid is coached by Dale Torborg.
No, he's coaching, like, Major League's conditioning.
Oh, shit.
So this match starts. Sting hits a facebuster but misses a Stinger splash. Sting clotheslines Jarrett to the floor and throws him around ringside. Sting hits Jarrett with a chair as they go up the ramp to the stage and then just come back immediately. Jarrett crotches Sting on the middle rope, getting in the ring, and then pulls him crotch first into the ring post. Jarrett hits Sting's knee with a chair into the ring post and then locks in the figure four around the bottom rope again. And the ref is just kind of like, hey, don't do that.
Hey, stop it. Hey.
If you keep doing that, I'm going to have to count to five. Don't you? One. Hey. Like, it's a fucking rope break. What are you doing? Yeah.
It's like punishing a child.
Because, like, I'm literally like, all right, look, this is a literal rope break. And it takes him so long to count. Yeah. And I'm like, holy fucking Jesus. And then Jarrah breaks the hold. And Mark Bynum's like, well, why do you have to do that? I'm like, it's a
rope break. It's the rules.
Jarrah taunts the crowd, tries to smash Sting in the corner, but Sting hulks up. Jarrah low blows Sting and then, like, has to sneak a chair shot around the ref's back. And I continue to question why.
Yeah.
That is my problem. And I know we've talked about this ad nauseum. Either it's fine or it's not. Stop having it both ways. Mm-hmm. He literally low blows him in front of the ref and then goes, well, the chair's in the ring. Oh, sorry, bud. I know I hit him five times the chair outside the ring and that was fine, but doing a move onto the chair, that's just too much.
Are we still doing like the refs with lax rules thing? Is that still a thing?
Emily.
Emily. They haven't mentioned it in a while.
Yeah, because it was episode 3, we were doing DQ.
I was thinking about that recently. Like, man, we haven't said DQ in a while.
Yeah, because I've grown numb to it.
But when they started doing, like, oh, the refs are lax rules, the commentary was mentioning it every, like, 10 minutes. Like,
even
oh,
then, they
no,
were
the
calling
referees.
For DQs and unfairness.
Yeah.
So even the lax rules, they admitted were bullshit.
Well.
Anyway, Sting kicks out, counters a suplex into the Scorpion Death Drop onto the chair, which he makes sure the ref doesn't see, because otherwise, oh, he'd
That'd
be
DQ. That'd be bad. That'd be a DQ.
And Sting gets the win. Jarrah appears hurt after the match, and I'm like, this feels like a work. Thoughts on this match?
I didn't really have many.
Yeah, it was...
I'm bummed that it's like... This should have been a bigger deal. This should have been a bigger return. This was so hyped up for so many weeks, and it seemed so nothing.
Yeah, I mean... You need to give Jarrah and Sting more than 3 minutes.
Well, yeah. Like, they could have done a really good match, and this just felt like it couldn't get started, and then it barely finished.
I think in hindsight, I need to give more credit to 3Count and Young Dragons for that ladder match in like 3 minutes.
Yes.
Like, you know what? They actually, I think they literally maximized the 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, to the point where they went over the 100% and it sort of come back around. But it's like, yeah, it's so hard to maximize a 3 minute match.
Yes, I agree.
And yeah, they couldn't do it here because it's that fucking hard. And yeah, it's Sting's big return. And I mean, we'll actually get some storyline development with him later because this just feels.
Thank God, yeah.
This just felt so random and out of nowhere. It just felt the need to be like, yeah, Sting is a good guy and Jarrah's a bad guy.
It didn't feel random and out of nowhere. It just felt like.
Sting's involvement, I mean. There was no reason for him to be involved in this story.
That's fair. I just, like, if you wanted Sting's return to be against Jeff Jarrett, there was a way to do that that was, like, more meaningful. And this just, this felt throwaway, which kind of undercuts his whole return, which undercuts the whole reason he was gone. It's, like, it's a domino effect backwards.
So we've talked about the anti-Chekhov's gun, where it's, like, if a gun appears on stage, it will never be used.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what happens with the next backstage segment, which is an ambulance leaves. We find out Jarrett was in the ambulance. Ambulance is going to where Booker T's wife is.
Mm-hmm.
And as the ambulance leave, Booker T arrives. And I went, oh, okay, the injuries at work and he's going to attack Booker's wife at the hospital. Because that's the logical fucking story. Jarrett has faked a way to get to the hospital to go after Booker's wife.
Sure. Yeah.
Nope.
No.
No.
This is like nothing. Nothing happened.
Literally, there's literally no reason.
To the point where like I barely even realized that there was an ambulance there.
There's literally not a single reason Jarrett needed to actually leave the building other than, Booker might beat him up.
Got him. Cool.
So the perfect event come out to ringside as Tony Schiavone tries to pay tribute to Gordon Solie. For our next match, it's Chronic versus Vampiro and the Great Muta. Versus Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare for the tag team titles. Did you like Chronic's 419 shirt?
I did. So this was not a three-way tag match.
Yeah, it's one where everybody has to tag in.
Well,
But do they?
But yes and no, though. So I thought going into this match, this was a four-corner tag team match.
Yeah, because a heel team comes out and then they just go, no, we're going to commentary.
But they don't say that that's what they're doing. They announce that the match is starting and then this team comes out. So you're like, oh, they must be going to the ring. So like, I wrote down all four teams. And then as the match started, I was like, oh, sorry, there's only fucking three, I guess? It was very confusing to even get started. And then there's just too many people. And this was just a bad match. Sorry.
Yeah, it's incredibly unclear, which also kind of is similar to last week. But we do have Vampiro in great mood of face paint. I think the ICP are still around, but definitely the Dark Carnival are changing their look.
The brothers
a
little bit. In paint.
The rookies brawl with the Dark Carnival outside to start, and then everyone kind of resets. Brian Clark hits a butterfly suplex on Jindrak and then a big shoulder block. Clark goes for a Cobra Clutch slam, but Vampiro tags in, breaks up the pin. Muda tags in to hit his flaily offense. And I noticed that the Dark Carnival and the rookies don't know which corner they're meant to be in this match.
Oh, yeah, because again, they keep changing. It's not clear.
I think it's Muda. Admittedly, I think it's Muda.
Muda is such a disappointment to me in WCW so far. Like, he has this legend status above him. I just kind of expected him to come in and be, you know, a legend, and he sucks.
Yeah, I mentioned this a little bit when he debuted. He is about to reinvent himself and become a massive star again. Mm. He's very much lost in what he's doing now. Oh. Vampiro just climbs to the top and hits a diving clothesline. Like, no tag. Muda's in the ring. Like, oh, it's fine. Muda goes to the apron. Like, okay, whatever. Vampiro hits a spinning kick and chops in the corner. Both men are down in a weird collision, but Muda and Adams tag in. Full Nelson slam to Muda. Adams goes to press slam Vampiro into Jindrak, and they kind of just fuck that up. And O'Hare hits a super kick and is told to get out of the ring because not legal, man. Everything breaks down. Jindrak hits a jump up top rope Frankensteiner. O'Hare hits a swanton bomb and goes to pin Vampiro. But while that's happening, Brian Adams has just been kneeling next to the Great Muda for about 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And right before they go for the pin, he goes, oh, I should try to win this match, and pins the Great Muda. So, chronic win.
This was so confusing of an ending. I backed it up a couple times to rewatch it. It doesn't make any sense.
Also, how is everyone the legal man?
Right.
Because you can't have...
There was no way that there were four legal men.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
Even three.
But it was just like, large tag team events like this are either great because all the teams have really good chemistry and they can like bounce off of each other, a la like Dudley's versus Hardy's versus Christian Edge. Or...
You fucking Christian Mark putting him first.
Or it can be like this where it is just sloppy, messy, there's no chemistry, so it's boring, but there's just a lot of chaos happening in the ring, and they're banking on the chaos to be the entertaining factor.
Also, what was the big move Brian Adams hit to pin Muda?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it just
happened.
He's just like, he kneels there for like way too long, and they're like, oh, I'm gonna pin him. And then, like, the rookies act like, oh, you stole this title from, like, what? But like, this is the definition of why ring psychology matters.
Yes, exactly.
They actually go, oh, you're not a legal man. You need to get out. And then they go, oh, well, fuck it. I lost it.
Right.
You literally, like, you can't do that moment in the match if it doesn't matter.
Right.
Also, the way that this match went, just have everybody legal at the same time. It didn't fucking matter.
It never really did. Just make it a battle royal. Call it a day.
This was terrible.
This is god-awful. Like, we are not short for worst bits on this episode. This was up there for me.
I think my go-to for worst bit qualifying segment is the Gordon Ramsay. What a mess.
Literally, yeah. What a shame.
What a shame.
What a shame. Oh, tragic.
Speaking of tragic, Shane Douglas and Tori are with the Cat in his office. The Cat says he enjoyed Thunder, referencing the botched sex tape. He also throws something at Tori for a line I rewound four times, could not make out.
No idea.
But he enjoyed Thunder so much, he's booking Viagra on a pole.
Jesus.
Backstage, Booker thanks Sting and asks if he still wants the match for later. And Sting's like, if you're fine, yeah, let's do it.
See, I liked that. I like that respect of, like, I said you would have a match. If you're still up for it, let's go. Like, yeah. I like that moment.
Pamela Pumpkins with Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare.
This isn't over. Bears.
This isn't over. O'Hare's. Yeah, they, but, like, they just imply, like, Chronic, like, stole the victory.
Yeah.
Like,
fucking shut up.
I'm like, the other can't have, based on the rules. Also, just
shut up.
Yeah, fuck up. Fuck everything here.
Shut up. Oh, man. I just don't care. God. Listen.
You don't owe hair care?
You could have just said, I don't owe care.
Well, Emily, let's go into what is one of the most hyped segments of the death of WCW.
Yeah, but we need to talk about that.
5 minute build, if that.
We need to talk about that.
Because it's Viagra on a pole.
Yeah. So we need to talk about this. Because when we first started this podcast, you sold WCW to me under the bill of, like, these fucking stupid matches.
Yeah.
Everything's on a pole. Judy's on a forklift. Like, kind of the chaos. And you cited Viagra on a pole a few times to me. So I've kind of been waiting for this. I had never seen it. And that's what's so bizarre to me, because you knew about it. It's been cited in all kinds of, like, why did WCW die? It's in the books. It's in the documentaries. It's all over. Like, people know about this match. Why do people know about this match?
I think the concept is just so stupid that it sticks with you.
But the thing is, like,
well,
it got no build. Maybe 5 minutes, like you said. The in-ring work of the match, good. The only thing that was stupid was just the gimmick. Was the gimmick really that detrimental to the history of the company?
Now, Emily, all right, I'm going to ask you two questions. Do you remember the match of Big E versus Apollo Crews?
No.
Do you remember the Nigerian drum match?
I knew that's what you were going with. Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah,
but, like,
it's that. It's just, it's given it a stupid gimmick that gives it life.
Yeah, I mean, but I would argue that this doesn't give it life. This literally kills a company.
Oh, I'm saying it gives the memory life. It doesn't.
Sure. Yeah. I guess, like, the name Viagra on a pole is just so ridiculous. It's like the Custia Dominic ladder match. Like, it's fucking stupid.
Yeah, but I think we all love
Pepper
it.
On a pole.
Look, I hate to say this. I think we both agree. Viagra on a pole is borderline the best match in this fucking card.
No, it is. I was so ready for this to be my worst bit, bar none.
Yeah, like,
it doesn't even crack the
in.
Top three worst bits of this episode.
So let's get into it, and then we can kind of wrangle our thoughts.
Sure.
So it's Shane Douglas versus Billy Kidman, Viagra on a pole, and it actually is on a pole. We should
it
note.
Is. It's in, like, an old timey, almost like Looney Tunes ass looking medicine bottle.
Yeah,
that just says Viagra on
you
it.
You don't get to reference Looney Tunes. How dare you?
I know it enough.
Oh, yeah? Who's Slowpoke Gonzalez?
The turtle.
No.
Damn it.
Good guess, though, honestly.
Thank you.
We see the setup for this match, which is on Thunder. All right, Shane Douglas has his own sex tape. He's like, I'm going to one-up Billy Kidman. And Kidman finds the outtakes of the sex tape in Tori's apartment, which Kidman still has the keys to.
Which, I'm sorry. If you make a sex tape and you keep the outtakes on a separate tape.
Well, I'm.
What?
I'm guessing the whole thing was on one tape and then they cut it to
so
whatever.
So Billy watched it enough to edit it to just the bloopers?
Well, I assume the first bit was the bloopers. I'm assuming.
I don't know, man.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm just, like, thinking of the logistics of it again. Like, the second you put any amount of thought into it, it all falls apart.
We get Shane Douglas promo time. He doesn't blame the cat for the match. He blames Kidman, and he says this sex tape bullshit has gone on long enough. Yeah.
It's been going on a week, but
Still,
it is too long.
Tony Schiavone then explains the rules. If you get the Viagra, you can use it on your opponent.
Which is vague. It's so vague that it's like, what do you mean by that, Tony?
Yeah.
Use it on your opponent. He has to clarify later on, like, it's in a glass bottle. You can use it as a weapon.
How did you feel about Mark Madden's
dick jokes consistently throughout the entirety of the match?
Well, there's that, but there is the other recurring bit of him talking about the great Viagra on a pole matches of the past.
That was funny. I thought it was clever.
I know. It's I like, it clever. Rides the line. No pun intended.
yeah, because they're talking, commentary knows how stupid this
now,
is.
Now, I did note the list of people he mentioned, because he mentioned like, oh, Vern Gagne, yeah. Nick Bockwinkel, Johnny Ace was the one name out of them. I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Why is that one interesting?
Because he is currently working backstage as a producer. Additionally, that's John Laurinaitis.
Oh, I know John Laurinaitis. I just don't know why that's interesting. Yeah,
he's suddenly, if you put that as a list, he is not the big star of that group. So it was just him shitting on the backstage producer.
Oh, okay.
But also, fuck John Laurinaitis.
Well, yeah, we've said that many a time. I just thought it was funny. We're like, commentary knows what this is, and it's fucking stupid. So they're like, let's make it even stupider. Well,
with the dick jokes, Tony has to yell at Mark Madden, will you just shut up, please?
Tony does not fucking give a shit anymore. Tony's over it. Tony doesn't want to hear your dick jokes.
All right, bell to bell. Kidman hits a head scissors, but Douglas hits a knee to the head of Kidman. I noted there's 30 minutes left, and they mentioned three matches yet to happen, not including this one.
Yep.
Kidman hits a diving crossbody, but gets tripped up by Torrey on the outside. Douglas hits his reverse neck snap as Mark Madden points out the irony of Viagra being on a pole.
Got it. Do you get it? Because dicks sometimes are poles. Do you get it, Nick? Do you get it?
Douglas hits two...
I don't think you get it.
Douglas hits two snap suplexes and then a Falcon Arrow combo. Douglas then press slams Kidman and goes for the franchiser, but Kidman fights him off and hits a big clothesline. Kidman hits a drop kick and kips up, but Douglas counters an Irish whip and hits a Pittsburgh plunge. Kidman hits a powerbomb on Douglas when he goes up top for the Viagra, and then Douglas hits a back suplex and goes for it again, but Kidman hits Kidman faction. Torrey distracts Kidman, but not for long as he counters Douglas and hits him with an Unprettier, which I know eventually gets a Kidman name, but I don't know what it is yet.
Is that better than the Unpretty Her?
No, it's a lesser name.
Good.
Kidman then climbs up top and just grabs the bottle, but drops down into a franchiser. The bottle, I couldn't tell, was either entirely properly gimmicked or not at all properly gimmicked. Because on that, the bottle just like shatters into a million pieces to where I actually thought a piece entered Shane Douglas's shoulder.
Yeah.
But it was just like, oh no, it just laid across.
It was, I was like stuck to him or something.
I literally thought he got like shivved. I was like,
and
oh, fuck.
The color of the glass is like red tinged. So it looked like it looked bloody. It looked bad.
Torrey was tracking the ref. The ref turns around, sees that Douglas has the broken bottle, so he wins?
Yeah, this made no sense.
Yeah, remember how if you get the bottle, you can use it? That's not...
So I thought that on a pole matches were like, once you retrieve the thing on the pole, it's like a ladder match. Once you retrieve the thing, then you win.
It varies.
So this one was more just like a regular match, but you also have to get the thing on the pole, but when you get it, you can use it as a weapon. However, but none of that mattered in the result of this match.
Usually, the ipping on a pole is if you get it, you can use it. Yeah. We watched Stun Gun on a pole where if you get it, you can use it.
Sure.
And the problem is I'm trying to think of the fucking bullshit skins match where it was the leather jacket. And I'm like, what, did you win? Or
I don't remember.
Yeah, but
on a pole
is if you get it, you can use it.
Okay.
That's why it's not a ladder match. Ladder matches, you get it, you win.
But Billy got it, used it.
Yeah, no, this is fucking stupid.
But because Shane had it in his hand, he won. He didn't tap out. He didn't pin him. That's just it.
Emily, do you want to argue about this one or the straitjacket match?
I paid more attention to this one, if I'm honest.
Yeah?
The straitjacket match was stupid. I blanked out of it. Like I said, we are not short for worst bits on this episode.
Post-match, they try to do the thing where Torrey beats shit out of Kidman and she gets like carried away to where Shane Douglas has to like drag her off. But she's not going at it that like ferociously. So when
Shane like scoops her, she just like starts flailing.
Yeah, it feels out of line for him to grab her.
It's like, yo, hold me back. Why aren't you holding me back? Hold me back. Hold me back.
And then somehow Kidman has ended up with like a mouthful of Viagra. And Tony's like, oh, I hope he has a heart condition. He might OD. It's like, what the fuck?
But something worse than that happens later in the episode. And
well,
I can't.
Get to there. Thoughts,
anyway.
Yeah, thoughts on the Viagra and a pole match?
Listen, the in-ring work is the best we've seen so far this episode.
I know.
It was good. It was good. It was good wrestling between Billy Kidman and Shane Douglas. Like, I actually really enjoyed this without the fucking gimmick.
Yeah, that's the problem is, like, the only thing about this is how stupid the gimmick is.
Yeah.
Because the two guys just, like, they don't constantly go for it or do anything fun during the match or, like, fun in quotes. But, like, yeah, it's just two guys having a pole match.
To the point where I don't think that either wrestler wanted anything to do with this fucking Viagra match.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to go in the ring, have a match, and then the ending had to be with the stupid pole.
Yeah. Like, more or less, if you said this was a lead pipe on a pole match.
Yeah.
This would be the same match.
Same match.
Yeah. There's nothing about this match that lends itself to that.
No, because why should it? Why would any match lend itself to Viagra on a pole?
So he doesn't have it anymore, but for a little while, Billy Kidman had in his Twitter bio, "Master the Viagra on a pole match."
Did he really?
Yeah.
Okay, at least like you can laugh about it. Oh, but yeah, he lost!
Did he?
Well,
no. Depending on how you define this match, no. He should have won.
And that's one of the stupidest things.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there. Backstage, we see Miss Hancock and Major Guns get ready for their hardcore match. And then we see Nash and Steiner getting ready for their match. Guns and Hancock find each other backstage. Stacy is an entirely different top than the one she was, quote-unquote, getting ready in. Did you catch that?
No, I did not. Sorry.
She was in a purple tank top in the getting ready thing, and then we cut to the match, and she's in their normal attire.
Who fucking cares?
Why would you cut it 30 seconds before then be a different talk?
You focus so much on the getting ready portion. That's just so funny to me.
They brawl in the women's bathroom and Guns can barely figure out how to work a shower knob.
Yeah, she was struggling so hard with the shower. Like, you didn't have to go to the shower.
They brawl over to catering and Stacey cakes Guns. Yeah, and
The second there was a cake on that table, we knew what was going to happen.
I was listening to Brian Alvarez review this show, and it's like, look, I don't want to be a pig, but it's a damning indictment that you couldn't make this hot to anybody.
Right. Right, because this was the least sexy girl-on-girl fight. There was nothing about this that was remotely sexy. It was just food, like, especially at the catering table. I think it was Guns poured on Stacy the punch or whatever beverage that was.
Yeah.
It was like a red beverage. You could have done that in a sexy way. I'm not advocating for... It was a
red viscous liquid.
Sure. Sure it was. No, I'm not advocating for the sexualization of women in wrestling. Like, I don't want that. If we're doing it, though, pour the red liquid down her fucking white shirt. Why would you not do that?
Well, why would you cut to the ring where Sergeant AWOL and David Flair are just suddenly brawling?
What?
AWOL slides the table in the ring as the women actually head out from backstage towards the ring. David and AWOL brawl onto the floor as Hancock actually throws Major Guns through the table, which I'm like, that's got to be the finish. No.
No.
Scoop slam pin. I'm like, sure, what?
Why not? This was so dumb.
So Miss Hancock wins and then rips Major Guns' top off the top layer.
Yeah.
The bit she always rips.
Yeah. And then just like dances on top of her.
AWOL scares her off and then carries Guns to the back.
That's terrible. Over. That was just stupid. It was a waste of time. Waste of breath.
Like, segments like this, I feel like, get a pass in the worst bit of the show. Because the expectations are so low.
Yeah, this wasn't on my worst bit list.
It should be. This was terrible.
Oh, it should be. But there were so many other bad things on this show.
Are you looking forward to ROTC at pay-per-view?
What does ROTC mean?
Rip off the camouflage.
Fucking stupid. No, I'm not looking forward to it. My God, it's going to be this again with just different clothing.
Emily, let's go backstage. And do you want to take us through this segment?
I don't know that I can. So backstage, Billy Kidman is, you know, wallowing in whatever self-pity, I guess. But three or four Nitro girls come up and like comfort him. And they're like, oh, Billy, it's going to be okay. And Billy says something along the lines of like, I've had a hard day. Boosh. And the girls are like, I can tell. So he ate the Viagra. He swallowed it. He swallowed like multiple pills of Viagra. Now he's got a fucking hard on. And they're like, let's go. Like, I feel like you need to call a doctor. I don't know. I know it hasn't been 4 hours, but I feel like you need to call a doctor.
I'd have the force of the nitro girls first.
And that
doctor can wait.
It gave me such an icky ick.
It just means the nitro girls are sluts.
If
your penis is hard, they'll have sex with you, was the implication here.
But see, like, if I walked up on a man that I, like, kind of know, and he's wearing full body full of clothing, and I can tell that he is fully fucking erect, I'm running away. That's terrifying to me. I don't know what to do with that. I don't want to be around any of that. I don't know if you're like, I'm not considering that you're a predator, but I don't want to be part of whatever is going on.
Mr. Bergen, do you have a raging erection?
I want nothing to do with this. Seeing a man standing in the middle of his workplace, fully clothed, boner up, that's nothing but bad.
While pouting.
Nothing but bad is going on there.
Yeah. So Billy Kimmy goes to have a foursome with the Nitro Girls. I feel like this just buried everyone involved.
God, so bad. It's so bad.
Emily, we only have two matches left.
Thank God.
Our second to last match is Scott Steiner with Medasia versus Kevin Nash in a straitjacket match. And Scott Steiner grabs the mic. And for the first time in a while, Emily, he's just the best at sex. Hit it.
I'm going to tell you the difference between me and you two guys. See that new blood rising. The highlight of your night will be beating the hell out of each other. The highlight of my night is when I leave the show because I never go home alone because I'm hung like Holmes. That's why all my freaks know there's nothing finer than doing a 69er with Scott Steiner.
He's just the best.
He is.
He's just the best at sex. He didn't need to be part of that Viagra match. He's hard all the time, baby. Ew, stop.
All the time? Oh, God.
Ew, 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 ew.
The two trade strikes and that the two is in him and him and Nash, not him and Medasia.
Yeah. Trade and strikes. Hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey.
Nash hits a side slam and goes for the pin, but there's no ref. And I'm like, and there's no bell. Has this match even started? Is this a match?
Is this a match? Where's the straitjacket?
But also, great sign that the guys don't know the fucking rules of this match.
No, where's the straitjacket?
Well, Steiner kicks out, like, waiting for the count. Like, oh, wait, shit. This is not count. Nash hits his framed up elbow and foot choke. Medasia distracts Nash for a Steiner low blow and a spinning belly to belly. Steiner then counts his own pin after. Tony notes that on Thunder, we're going to have an exclusive interview with Vince Russo.
I can't tell you how little I'm looking forward to that.
I think it gets played in full on Nitro.
Amazing. So I don't have to watch Thunder. Great.
If it's not, I'll have you watch it.
No.
Steiner then hits his flexing elbow and jaws at the crowd. Steiner throws Nash around ringside and works him over in the corner. Nash gets his boot up on a charge and then a big boot to Steiner. Medasia weakly hits Nash with a chair shot, which just has no effect. Much like using side beam on a Pangoro.
There you go.
Nash jackknifes Medasia. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. So Rick Steiner comes out but eats a big boot. Scott hits Nash with a chair and then locks in a Steiner recliner as Rick starts putting Nash in the straitjacket. Now, Emily, we may have glanced over it, but what was commentary noting the whole thing about the straitjacket match was?
You had to get your opponent in the straitjacket, and then you could, like, do whatever you want to them until you're tired.
Yes. This match basically has no end until you just go, I'm done.
I'm over it, yeah.
So, the whole thing is wrap up your opponent to brutalize them.
Yes.
They keep going, oh my God, what if he does this? Oh, he can just take him out.
Mm-hmm.
The Steiners put Nash in the straitjacket, and Scott's music just hits.
He does nothing after this thing is on. Not one move.
Rick hits some kicks. They kind of write this off as like, oh, Nash took out Medasia, so Scott was checking on her. But
no.
The whole fucking point of this match was, let's wrap him up and beat the shit out of somebody. And then the second he fucking puts it in, match over. Yep. Call it, everybody. Not every department can be incompetent. It needs to be one or two at a time. It can't be every department at once. Also, I think the bell rang to end the match. You didn't ring the bell to start the match.
So the match actually started at the end.
It's not even
a
fucking match. It's not...
Oh my god.
I hate this company.
Oh baby. We still got years of talking about it going.
I know.
But I don't think I realized how heated you were for this.
Hold on. I actually meant to fucking look this up of I'm gonna look this up in real time and Emily's gonna fill time. I'm looking up when the fuck we're done with Vince Russo's stupid fucking bullshit. Cause he's done before Halloween Havoc, and so I know we're near in the year 2025. We will be done with fucking Vince Russo.
So we have at least another fucking year.
No, it's less than that. Hold on, it is. He is done after the October 2nd, 2000 Nitro, which is June 12th.
So we have until the summer.
Yes. So we have, like 6 more months of Russo. That's.
6 more months. We can do that. We can do that. Wait, do we have 6 more months or does the show have 6 more months?
We have.
We can do that.
Swerve. The groundhog saw his shadow.
No.
But pretended he didn't, bro. 6 more months of Russo.
Jesus Christ.
I think I'm underselling how angry this fucking match made me at the time.
Yeah, clearly. I didn't realize how angry you were.
Don't have rules to a match. Just have to be a bro.
Stop setting up rules if you're not going to follow your own rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this being shortly after the bullshit tag team match really fucking just doubled down on the, you're just having things happen to happen.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Oh, Christ. But let's move into our main event.
Must we?
I mean, it's a good match on paper and frankly, kind of in practice. It's Sting versus Booker T for the WCW title.
No, it's a good match in practice until it's fucking not.
Yeah.
Russo is so back, baby. Do you need to like decompress more from that last match? Because I feel like I can still like feel the heat rating off of you.
It's fine. I'm fine. I mean, we're going to wind this down into it.
We've got 6 more months. We can handle 6 more months.
Sting and Booker shake hands to start. Sting arm drags Booker, hits a clothesline. Sting then tries the Scorpion Deathlock really early on, but Booker gets the ropes. Like Sting smartly he's a face, but like, you have a bad leg. I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
Sting tries for it again, but once again, Booker gets the ropes and rolls out. They brawl around ringside until Sting throws Booker back in and tries for a diving splash. Booker gets his knee up and hurts himself on it. But Booker hits his scissors kick on Sting, only gets a 2. They hit kind of a double crossbody, and Sting rolls to the floor, really leaning into the ring apron. I was like, that's weird that you're leaning there. All of a sudden, an arm just pulls Sting under the ring apron.
Who could it be?
It's Dale.
Fucking Dale Torborg. To me, this is where the match ceased to be good.
Sting emerges and he's bleeding. But even though he's bleeding, hits a back elbow, ducks a Harlem sidekick, hits a DDT. Sting tries for a Scorpion Death Drop, but Booker counters, hits a bookend, and gets the pin. Sting is up almost immediately after and goes after the person under the ring, which is Dale Torborg.
Well, yeah, he has to be up immediately because we still have so much to do.
Well, I just want to note that it's been in 2 weeks in a row, Booker T has pinned a former world champion only for them to immediately get up and undercut the win.
Yeah, fuck Booker T. We don't actually like him. We don't actually care about him and his success.
So once it's revealed it's Dale Torborg, the rest of the Dark Carnival comes out to brawl with Booker and Sting. Jeff Jarrett then just comes in through the crowd, thought he's at the hospital, nothing there.
Because why not? Because he can't be left out.
Hits Booker T with a chair. Jarrett then calls for a rope to be lowered, and I'm like, oh, fucking no.
What the fuck is happening here?
He wraps it around Booker's knee, and I'm
thank
like,
God
okay,
it's knee.
Good.
I was thinking the same thing that you were. I was like, we cannot do this again. We've done this before. We're not doing this again. The fact that we've done it before, I can't.
I'm like, oh, good. It's only something that's probably incredibly unsafe because it's not actually life-threatening.
Yep. Great. At least he'll only, like, really destroy his foot and not die. Cool.
Yeah, so Jarrett wraps the more or less noose around Booker's leg and hoists him up. In the background, the demon has a flaming spike, and they apparently put Sting in the demon sarcophagus. The demon spits fire towards the coffin sarcophagus. Fire extinguishers are going off before the fucking spit even hits.
Okay, so the match ended. Sting attacked Dale. Jarrett's back. Tied up Booker. His foot is hanging from a fucking noose.
Jarrett breaks a guitar on Booker's knee.
Yes.
Oh, folks, we're out of time.
The coffin's on fire. Sting's apparently in the coffin. What?
How is Sting being killed meant to be the B plot of this match?
He just finished getting killed. He just came back from getting killed. Why are we killing him again?
Any thoughts on the in-ring in this match?
It was fine, but it was entirely undercut the second the Dale was revealed.
It was fine, but you knew the Russo bullshit was going to kick
in. As soon as Dale pulled him under, I was like, this match is no longer going to be my best bit, because how can it be? This is ridiculous. This is insane to me. This is like when we first started watching this show, where all the chaos happened at the very last minute of the show. Everybody ran out and took over. This is that, but like on steroids. It's not everybody running out, but the people that do run out, they're fucking doing something Russo-y. Like everything here could have been its own Russo segment. It's just throwing all of the spaghetti at the wall, and it doesn't matter what's stuck. We're going with all of it.
Yeah, the Russo of all this, just like, this is such a sneakily bad show.
Yeah.
To where the first half is like fine. And then
it's deceptive.
Everything Russo hits in the second half.
Yeah. No, it really does. Woo, I'm exhausted after that match.
Yeah, like a lot of things are doing on paper work, but it's just the execution and added bullshit that like don't.
No.
Any final thoughts before we get into our post segment?
This was a rough show.
Yeah.
We were flush with options for worst bit, not so much best bit.
Yeah, I'm going to struggle, but
I have answers for all three, but...
Well, let's dive into this. Emily, it's best bit, worst bit, and MVP. What the fuck did you come up with for best bit?
Somehow the best bit of this show is the wrestling portion of the Viagra match. That's the best bit for me. I recognize that the entirety of the match, it's in my list of worst bits. I have four or three things in my worst bit list. But the wrestling portion of the Viagra match is the best thing that we've seen on the show so far.
Emily, I hate it, but I agree.
Yeah, right?
The only thing close was Lance Storm and Chavo, and it wasn't but that
it
great.
It wasn't that close. It was not that close.
Yeah, I hate to give it to Viagra on a poll, but fuck
I'm not
me.
Giving it to the Viagra. I'm giving it to the wrestling.
Okay, I know you won't, but I will live with the shame of putting Viagra on a poll as my best bit.
It will not go under my goddamn spreadsheet. No, nope.
I get why. However, it's the best fucking match in this show.
It is the best match.
I will live with the shame.
I will not have the Viagra on my soul. The wrestling is the best bit. I liken it to a run-in that I'm like, oh, this person ran in the match. That's the best bit. It's a bit. The match is not the best. The wrestling is the best.
You know what, Emily? Your soul is soft.
I'd rather that.
It needs some Viagra.
I don't think it does. What's your worst bit, Nick? Shut up.
Oh, it's Nash's shoot promo.
Okay.
Fuck. Honestly, as mad as I got about everything else in this show.
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
Nash's fucking, I might not be professional. Fuck you. Go for absolutely. Because also, if it's a shoot, then don't book him on the show. If it's a work, then it's fucking terrible.
Right.
Fuck you.
I had three things on my worst bit list.
Okay.
I had the straitjacket match. I had the boring as fuck tag match, the triple threat tag match. And I had the end of the main event, the clusterfuck that was. I think I have to give it to that.
Yeah?
Yeah. There was just so much happening, and it was so Russo, and it was so chaotic, but stupid chaotic. That I'm like, oh, we have regressed so far. What has happened?
They're at least trying. They're doing too many things.
I don't
but
even
at
think
least
that they're
trying.
No, I disagree.
And then I am really curious for you. Who is your MVP for this show?
Oh, I already said it earlier. It's Mean Gene. Who else am I going to give it to?
I went with somebody who, look, his in-ring action was fine. Backstage, he was polite. And Emily, he's the best at sex. Scott Steiner's MVP.
You're saying he was polite backstage?
Yeah. Where's the room? Thank you. And then he beat up the guy. Should I knock? He did. He knocked, Emily. He is the one who knocks.
Okay. I think he's getting up there with like the person you've given MVP to the most in this podcast, because you give it to him all the time.
You still like
I will
once.
Not.
No, look, in reality, I thought Scott Steiner was actually really entertaining in his bits in the show. My issue with his match was around the bullshit stupidity of the booking. Like,
I agree.
I can only fault him so much for that.
Yeah, fault the cat.
Well, Emily, the good and bad news is we have one more show before New Blood Rising.
How are we not at New Blood Rising yet? When's the last time we talked about the New Blood?
But Emily, that's going to do it for our Christmas episode. Yeah, weren't you feeling festive?
I feel so holly and also jolly.
Well, if you want to listen to any of our back catalog, including our previous Christmas episodes.
Which are definitely more Christmassy than this one.
Yeah, we actually, the first one timed out really well. This one, nowhere fucking near.
Not at all.
But you can listen to all of our back catalog everywhere podcasts are found, besides SoundCloud. You can also follow us on social media, almost everywhere we're Butts in the Pod. Except for Blue Sky, where we are at Butts in the Seats, and Facebook, where we are Butts in the Seats Podcast.
You can also follow us on Patreon, patreon.com/buttsintheseats. Where for $5 a month, you can get about 20-ish plus 25 bonus episodes. We have been going through the Monday Night Wars for TNA.
We did Conspiracy Theory.
We just released our episode on Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. We also did the Jesse Ventura story.
We did WWE Evolution
to cleanse the palate. That's just become where we go and have fun and just talk about faff and bullshit in wrestling. So that's a fun time. We have a lot of fun over there. $5 a month gets you all that, plus everything new that comes. We do about one every 3 weeks. We'll put out an episode. It's worth it. I think so, at least.
Emily, any closing thoughts for our last episode of 2024 ends?
Thanks for another great year. We're 4 years into this thing now. Thanks again. Have a safe and happy new year, and we'll see you in 2025.
And with that well wishing, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to this final 2024 episode of the Butts in the Seats Podcast.
Bye.